Blog Talk Radio.
Here we are. The gross domestic product increases for the quarter 3.5%. The stock market and housing sales are up too. Is it time to sing Happy Days Are Here Again? A lawsuit alleging that President Obama should be removed from office because he wasn't born in the United States was dismissed today by a judge. How about Happy Birther to you? The House announces that its health care financing bill also has a public option, but it's different from the Senate's, and the Senate's might not pass. Can they reconcile? The United States government plans to rent some Afghans. President Obama turned down a three-way with Bill and Hillary. Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, welcome to Speaking of Everything with Jeff Bushman, that's me, and my tongue got in the way of my eye teeth. Those subjects and more, including a special essay on religion and government, ere this hour passes. And we have a guest. Lillian Brummett will be joining us. We'll be talking with her about trash, purple snowflakes, the environment, conscious discussions, writing, authors, radio, and more. We'll also be talking about health, including a brief discussion of stinging nettle, if there's time. And your calls are welcome as well, and you can reach us at 347-994-3796. Also, since we last met, Soupy Sales has died. And also, we'll be talking about books that we like and weird news. But first, that cup of coffee feels so great in your hands. The aroma goes right to your brain as you breathe it in. The cabin's warming up. The cabin's warming up for the family because you had the foresight to get the fireplace going. And now the smell of that wood is mixing with your coffee. It took time and it took work to get to the point that you could just get up and go to your cabin whenever you wanted to. But it also took being smart. You were smart enough, for example, to know that if you're in business and have a website, you're not really in business unless you're also blogging. You went to jeffonblogging.blogspot.com and chose Blog Wizardry to write your blogs for you. It was inexpensive, it was well done, and it increased traffic to your website and your company. Even though the cabin's getting nice and toasty, you can hear the wind blowing through the trees and get a sense of the brisk outside air. What was that noise? You go to the window. A doe and her fawn. It's going to be a good day. Blog Wizardry. jeffonblogging.blogspot.com. And again, I'm Jeff Bushman, and if you care to join us, it's 3796. I'll repeat that. My eyes are going blurry. 347-994-3796. This is how you separate the professionals from the amateurs. You have them look at a computer screen and see if they can read. Anyway, wanted to talk to you about those stories, and we mentioned news of the weird. Let's take the top story of the day. A number of people are saying the recession is over, which, by the way, is technically true and kind of meaningless. A recession means that two quarters in a row or more exist where the gross domestic product goes down. And an expanding economy is defined as a situation where the gross domestic product goes up two quarters in a row. We have now had a year and more of declining gross domestic product, and now we have one quarter of increasing domestic gross domestic product. That's a very good thing, and the stock market reacted in part to that and the fact that housing sales are up, but we are by no means out of this yet, and everyone has been saying that, but there are a couple of things additional I'd like to share with you. One of the reasons that housing sales are up is, first of all, because you're comparing it to a very low base of sales a year ago. No houses were selling, lots of houses were being foreclosed, and there still are foreclosures going on. But a lot of the sales that are taking place are sales from banks to individuals after the banks have foreclosed, and therefore prices are rather low. And I don't have to tell you that housing prices are generally low. And the question becomes, how long will it continue going up if the prices also come up? There may be some point of diminishing returns. But for now, the news on the economy is pretty good. The House of Representatives announced its health care financing reform bill today. That is, the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, described what was going to be in the bill. Now, it also has a public option. I say also because the Senate's bill also has a public option. But there are a lot of differences between the bills, and neither has passed. Additionally, for a bill to pass in the Senate, as a practical matter, it needs 60 votes. And the reason for that is that if you don't have 60 votes, the party or group of people that is opposed to your bill will filibuster in order to stop the filibuster. You need to have a vote on what's called cloture, which cuts off debate, cuts off discussion, and gets you to vote on the bill. If you don't have 60 votes, you can't get the bill considered. There are almost all Republicans, and probably all Republicans, and a few Democrats who are talking about either filibustering or not voting to cut off the filibuster, including Senator Joe Lieberman of Connecticut, who caucuses, at least for the moment, with the Democrats, but is technically an independent. In any event, there is a good chance that when the Senate does pass a bill, it will be without a public option. When I made the comment, can they reconcile, at the beginning of the show, what that is referring to is the fact that if the Senate passes a bill, any bill, and the House passes a bill with a public option, then they can get together in what's called the reconciliation process and create a bill basically compromising the two bills. If that bill has a public option and it goes back to the Senate and the House, that is not subject in the Senate to a filibuster. So that may be the way that health care reform is passed, in the absence of the ability to cut off a filibuster in the Senate at present. We also spoke about the United States government planning to rent some Afghans. And what that refers to is an old saying that you can rent an Afghan, but you can't buy one. What it refers to is that governments from foreign countries and governments within Afghanistan have previously paid off their enemies to stop fighting. And the rental aspect of it is that you can pay them now, but unless you're going to continue to pay them, then they will in fact turn back to the other side and continue to fight you. The United States, during the so-called surge in Iraq, paid off a number of Iraqi adversaries, and that allowed the United States Army to and other members of the military to gain a position there, a foothold, which allowed the so-called surge to work. The same strategy is going to be tried in Afghanistan, and in fact, part of the appropriations bill that was just signed by the president, although it doesn't specifically say that's what they're going to use the money for, it's pretty clear that some of that money is going to be used for the purpose of paying off some of the tribal insurgents in Afghanistan so that they will not be firing guns and improvised explosive devices at the United States military. The other item we mentioned about the president and Bill and Hillary Clinton actually has a little truth to it, but not in a sexual sense when we talked about a three-way. What it refers to is the fact that apparently after President Obama received the Democratic nomination for the presidency, he actually rather seriously considered Hillary Clinton as a vice presidential candidate. And he had his staff vet her, and the reason he ultimately said to members of his staff, according to a news report that came out today, that he didn't want to go forward with Hillary as the vice presidential candidate was that because of Bill Clinton, he'd always feel like there was someone else in the room. And that's what gave rise to the three-way joke at the beginning. But anyway, that's the situation. Hillary Clinton might have been a vice presidential nominee had it not been for the baggage, if you will, of Bill Clinton. On the other hand, she might not have gotten to the point where she could have been a viable candidate had it not been for Bill Clinton, but that's a question for mine's more historically oriented than mine. Though mine is fairly historically oriented, that really requires some much deeper delving than we have time for at this moment. In terms of weird news, I wanted to share a couple of stories with you. By the way, in about 10 or 15 minutes, we'll be joined by Lillian Brummett, as we mentioned earlier. And you can call now, call then, call after, your choice if you wish to join us. I'll give out the number one more time now. It's 347-994-3796. I also wanted to take an opportunity before we go into the other stories we'll be discussing to tell you about a book. It's a book that I've written that is available on the web, and the book has to do with investing in mobile homes for small investors. You could also be a tall investor. It's perfectly fine. But if you're an investor that is looking for something to improve your net worth and improve your cash flow, mobile homes might be the answer. I'm not offering to sell you a mobile home, but if you are interested in that possibility, you can read excerpts from that book, and if you choose to, buy the book as well. The website where you can find the book and read those excerpts can be traveled to by going to tinyurl.com. That's tinyurl.com/, and then all one word, mobile millionaire. That's where you'll find the book and be able to glance at it and decide if it's for you. If it's not, you will have wasted a little bit of time. If it is, you may have gained something very valuable. And once again, that's tinyurl.com/mobile millionaire. We have a couple of odd stories to tell you about, and you can find them and more at a site we have nothing to do with, but you might find interesting and or amusing. And that's called newsoftheweird.com. And we usually highlight stories from their site, at least a couple a week, but there's vastly more that we could never get into. You could have a whole show just on newsoftheweird.com. Well, let me tell you a couple of stories so you'll understand what we're talking about. A brother and sister, Daniel and Tevin East, were traveling close to the Nevada-Utah border at 1 a.m. on October 12th when they struck a coyote. As they were going 75 miles an hour and they felt there was no use stopping because undoubtedly the coyote was dead, they continued to their destination in North San Juan. Presumably that's in Utah. Two fuel stops, 600 miles, and 8 hours later, when they checked the car for damage, they found a live coyote trapped behind the fender. The wildlife officials that they called did eventually free the coyote, and it only had scrapes on one paw, and it had actually escaped when the wildlife officials had it in custody. And this might be a time for the roadrunner to be cautious, but the coyote escaped with just that. Something a little stranger and not involving, well, it does involve animals. It's another animal story, but not of that sort. It involves duct tape. As you know, duct tape has been used for just about everything. And now a 22-year-old Norwegian man used the duct tape along with stockings and boxes to conceal 14 royal pythons and 10 albino geckos, no relation to the insurance company, on his body in order to smuggle them into Norway. He had 24 live reptiles hidden under his clothes. The snakes are non-venomous, and they were in stockings taped to his stomach. The geckos were in boxes that were taped to his thighs. How did this guy walk? Anyway, after all of that, the only reason he got caught was because the customs officials found a tarantula in his baggage, and because of that, they decided to search him. Duct tape on your body. Okay. Anyway, this is not the kind of guy you want to shower with in the locker room, I'll tell you up front. Okay. In other areas to cover... Oh, we... didn't mention at length, but since we last met, Soupy Sales died. One would have to be, as they say in the media, of a certain age to remember the Soupy Sales show. But many people who are younger saw Soupy Sales on various quiz shows, game shows. I think he was on the Match Game for a while, which is an older game show. He was on several other types of shows. But he died recently at the age of 86. And they say after a long illness, which means they're not telling you what he died of, but presumably it was something like cancer or Alzheimer's or something. But in any event, on his show, he was famous for having pies thrown at him. And it was very slapstick, but until I reread his obituary, or read his obituary rather, I had forgotten, and I remember his show pretty well, but I had forgotten about the pies in the face because there was so much else on his show. Those of you who remember the show will remember he had characters, little puppets that were by the window called Pookie and Hippie. And this was in, I guess, the late 50s, early 60s. And then he also had a couple of other characters on the show, White Fang and Black Tooth. And White Fang would be what looked like in the days of black and white television, a large black furry arm. That was all you saw, and you saw Soupy Sales interacting with it. And then Black Tooth, which was supposedly another large dog, was same kind of furry arm that was black. Very clever, White Fang and Black Tooth. And he also had a doorway. Supposedly this was happening in his house with him facing the camera the entire show. And he would have various comedy bits that would occur at the doorway of the house. The one I remember is he heard somebody knocking in terms of a sound effect, and he went to the door, and it would be somebody else's voice. You would never see the other person. You would only hear them. And the one thing I remember is he went to the door, and a man said, "You've got to help me." And Soupy Sales would say, "What's the matter?" He says, "It's my wife." He says, "She thinks she's a pretzel." And Soupy Sales looked at the guy, and he said, "Well, maybe you ought to take her to a psychiatrist." He said, "I already tried that." He said, "Okay, and what did the psychiatrist say?" He said, "She's twisted." In modern times, that may not be the world's greatest joke, and I probably didn't do justice to it, but especially if you were a kid, that was very hip. He did get into trouble a couple of times on that show. One time he told the kids, "I want you to go into your mommy and daddy's bedroom when they're sleeping next time, and go into their wallets and take all of the pictures get all of the pieces of paper with pictures of presidents on them and put them in an envelope and send them to this address." And he would write the address of his show, which I believe came out of Detroit, on the blackboard for all the kids to look at. The other time he got into trouble, and I can't because this is radio, so you can't see me, but he held up five fingers. And with the reference to the aforementioned characters, every time he mentioned a character, he would put the finger down. So he held up five fingers and he said, "This finger is for Pookie," and put the finger down. "This finger is for Hippie. This finger is for White Fang. This finger is for Black Tooth." And with the one remaining middle finger extended, he said, "And this one's for the producer." He got taken off the air a couple of times. I think it was for at least one of those times was for that last joke. And that was Soupy Sales, who died during this last week. He was 86 years old. Let me also mention again, if you wish to call us, it's 347-994-3796. And we were talking before about other stories. Oh, I wanted to take a minute and discuss with you stinging nettle. As those of you who have joined us before are aware, I am a lay herbalist, a certified hypnotist, but a lay herbalist who's been involved in supplements and nutrition and natural health for over 30 years. And stinging nettle is a substance you might want to consider using after consultation with your healthcare provider. Stinging nettle, yeah, it's one of those things you hear about growing along the sides of roads in various parts of the country. But as a supplement, one of the things it does is it's an anti-inflammatory. One of the reasons I suggested you might consider asking your healthcare provider about it isn't because they'll say, yeah, that's great stuff, use it for sure. You want to make sure before you do begin using it, if you're taking any prescription medications or if you have a chronic health condition, that you ask your provider, your healthcare provider, if taking stinging nettle would be harmful to you or would have a reaction or response with regard to any of those prescription drugs. Obviously, if not, then you're free to take it, or the doctor will probably say, well, it may not help you, but it probably won't hurt you. Go on and take it, which is a typical response of the more enlightened MDs. Stinging nettle is an anti-inflammatory, as I mentioned, which means that if you have arthritis or you're an athlete, I am a weekend athlete, but if you are participating in sports and you have pain, pain is usually a result of inflammation. The stinging nettle will tend to relieve that. I will tell you of my own experience. I run, and before I started taking it, I would run on a Sunday, and I would be sore until Tuesday or Wednesday. Now the pain is gone by sometime Monday. It's a big help. And inflammation has also been implicated in other diseases, including heart disease. So if you wish to prevent the buildup of inflammation, stinging nettle may be for you. We have a call. I believe it might well be our guest, so let's check that out. And if not, it'll be somebody else we'll talk to. Lillian, are you there?
Yeah, this is Lillian. How are you?
I thought it might be. I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. A beautiful evening. You know, we had a little bit of light snow up here in south central BC, which is the southwestern province of Canada. It
right.
Just a little bit of snow, you know, just enough to cover the, you know, the branches as they're dropping their leaves and the ornamental grasses and things like that. And it was absolutely gorgeous. Not enough to actually stick around, you know, to do anything with or throw at anybody, but enough to just be beautiful and watch. You
I'll
know?
Bet. We are in the desert here. I'm in Arizona. And we're in the Phoenix area. So if we ever get snow here at all, it'd be both a miracle and a disaster at the same time, probably. Before we go on, I'd like to tell the listeners a little bit about you and your husband, Dave. Dave and Lillian have been writing together as a team professionally for about 10 years, starting out as freelancers, which they still do. And they've written three books that have been published, and they host a blog talk radio show, two of them actually, Conscious Discussions and Authors Read. They are also active bloggers, and they send out a newsletter, and the primary focus, if you will, or center of their attention is to help people realize the value of their efforts and to encourage them to be more proactive in their lives. The three books include, why don't I have you tell us about your books? Purple Snowflake Marketing, I know, is one of them.
Yeah, that's actually our most recently released book. It's in its second edition right now. It's an e-book, and Purple Snowflake Marketing is basically a step-by-step guide for writers who have a book of any genre that they're releasing or about to release into the market. So it's not about how to find a publisher or how to write your manuscript or any other aspect of the how-to writing of crafts in that regard, but what it is it's a marketing guide. It teaches you how to build a unique and frugal and effective marketing plan for each book that you produce in your career. It also offers resources at the end of the book in the appendices section. I believe there's 26 appendices there that are filled with about 900 or more resources that people can just use with their mouse, click on it, and go find themselves some promotional opportunities or some educational opportunities as well. So it's a really great, useful book in that regard, and that's just
sure.
been, as I say, you know, second edition. So obviously I'm really excited about that. Towards Understanding is my collection of poetry, 120 poems, nonfiction. It's telling a story my story of growing up on my own. I was on my own when I was about 13 and a half, and it's my story of growing, you know, past a broken home upbringing, and finding value in life, and coming to understand that as an individual I can have an impact, and those kinds of moving in with myself, those kinds of journeys in one's life, and that's what the book is about, towards understanding. And Trash Talk is our true love. It's something that we continue to write. It's based on a column that I started in 1999. My husband soon joined on when it became syndicated, and it was published internationally, both on and offline, until 2007. And we still occasionally will write a Trash Talk related article upon request, but basically we're finished writing the column. The book was released in 2004, and we're actually in the process of writing an ebook series based on the original Trash Talk book. So it's just a totally exciting journey. It's just one thing after another.
That's great. Now, Trash Talk emphasizes, among other things, rather than just the recycling aspect of ecology and waste, it's a lot of discussion about reusing that which is already used, if you will, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's four R's in waste management. A lot of people are familiar with the three R's, right? But there's actually four, and it starts with refuse, and then it's reduce, reuse, and recycle. So Trash Talk actually focuses on the reuse and reduce factor of those four R's, although we discuss all four R's in the book, and we give all kinds of great, you know, resources and examples for all of them. But the main focus is the reduce and reuse. So the first part of the book, it's got two parts. Now, the first part of the book lists in alphabetical order the items that you would commonly find in your trash bin, and it shows you ways of reusing it and creating an item that is useful or saves you money in some way or time in some way around your home or office. And we also talk
before
about...
Before you go on with that, why don't you give us one example of one item that you would find in the trash can?
Here's one I just used today. I was planting some garlic. I was a little bit late. I know. I'm a little bit late putting out my garlic this year. But what I did was I took a yogurt container and a pair of scissors, and I sliced slices, about an inch and a half along in length down the container. And then at the bottom of those slices, I cut it in V, so it was, you know, each piece would come out as a pointed end. So I made my own seed tags out of reusing a yogurt container that I would have had to put into the recycling bin anyway. So it's a way of reusing something. Now, when I'm finished with those seed tags, when they've been reused as much as I can and they're marked all over the place, I can't use them anymore, well, they can still be recycled. They haven't been, they're not something you have to throw in the garbage. So basically, it's just finding a new use for something and prolonging its life in that regard.
Right. You know, one of the things I find that people tend not to use, or if at best they'll put it in a recycling can, is, this sounds dumb because it's so obvious and seemingly trivial, is paper. They'll print on one side, you know, a letter, a fax, whatever, and they'll either toss it, heaven forbid, or they'll put it in the recycling bin when there's a perfectly good piece of paper on the back of it.
Yeah, and then ironically enough, they'll go down to the stationery store and buy big stacks of notepads.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Go ahead with what you were saying, though, about your book.
Yes.
I'm sorry?
I was just going to say it's all in changing one's mindset, which is really the focus of Trash Talk. It's all in how we look at waste. And sometimes we see it as this disposable item instead of looking at it as this valuable resource, which is what this green movement is all about. Now,
absolutely,
as you were saying, the second half of the book is about the reducing factor. So we talk about reducing your personal impact. So we talk about things like organic gardening, seed saving, choosing the things that you grow, how to save energy with landscaping, you know, choosing where you plant your trees and what kind of trees that you're planting can actually have a great impact on the energy factor of your home. We also talk about the fact that it brings up, you know, how certain types of landscapings can bring up your realty value and things things like that. We talk about water conservation and, you know, soil building and all kinds of other aspects as well, which all revolve around waste management, because believe it or not, there is waste recreated, because waste isn't always something that we send to the landfill. It's also things that are being leached into our water. It's things that are being released into our air. All of that is waste. So we tried to cover all of that in that book.
That's great. I mean, even I was just thinking what you were talking about. I was just thinking about tilling, about how tilling can obviously affect your topsoil, for example, in a negative way. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Now, you tell me about more about this. You started to talk about purple snowflake marketing. Before you go on with that, I think I told you in an email exchange we had, it was very odd. Before I contacted you and knew about purple snowflake marketing, that is about the book. I haven't read it. But before I knew about that, I had, in a book I was reading, Richard Carlson's Don't Worry, Make Money, I had stopped at a chapter. The next chapter was made a reference in the title to purple snowflakes.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just a very odd coincidence.
You know, actually, originally, my brother, Larry, is very much involved with promotion and building oneself, and he's always looking at all these self-help avenues and what have you, taking courses and things like that. So he's a great resource. He combs through a bunch of things and tells me what's really good to read, and I read those, you know.
Right,
saves
sure.
me a lot of time. Yeah, he's a great resource. But he was the one who actually came up with that term for me, and he said that he had heard it as well in his journeys. And so when I did research for the title of the book, what I found is it's like a coined term out there, a loosely coined term that anyone can use, and it's basically the same as saying, you know, think outside the box, or, you know, these commonly coined terms like that. And so what I really liked about it was the visual factor, because you can't help but think of this purple snowflake in a snowstorm, and that's exactly what it's like when you have a product out there, and there are hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people releasing similar products every year in the
whatever it is you're doing, yeah.
You know, world, exactly. And so it can be pretty tough. So how are you going to stand out like a purple snowflake? So I thought that was a pretty cool title.
Yeah, very much. The example that Carlson used was somebody who was trying to get the attention of a former football player for an investment or something. I don't recall the specifics. And so what the seller did was he sent the guy something FedEx. Of course, he always received stuff FedEx because people wanted him to pay attention. And what he did differently is he put a football in a FedEx package, FedEx envelope.
Mm-hmm.
So when the guy got it, being a football player, he recognized it, but it aroused his curiosity sufficiently that he opened it, which I assume is, you know, falling right into line with the kind of thing you're talking about in terms of differentiating yourself as a marketer of whatever you're marketing.
Exactly, exactly. Sometimes it's about packaging and presentation as yours, or in how you get their attention as well. What really brings that to mind for me is another example of someone sending a book to a book reviewer or an editor of a newspaper, but instead
and they get thousands. They get thousands.
Exactly, and instead of just sending it to the receptionist desk in a brown paper, you know, package, they actually wrapped it as if it was a gift and sent it as a gift. So when the receptionist opens the box, she sees this wrapped gift. She doesn't unwrap the gift. She puts that on the editor's desk on top of his pile because it's a gift. And so that's how, you know, one little way that you can stand out as you know, among a huge crowd.
That's right. Of course, now as a result of what you said, hundreds of editors across the country or both countries are going to get these gifts on their desk.
Yeah, well, one of the tips in the book.
Well, you should be thinking of your book anyway or whatever else you're marketing as a gift for whoever it is that receives it, regardless, right?
Exactly, because that's what it is, for sure.
Yeah. Tell us about your radio shows. Sounds very interesting.
Okay, well, we have Conscious Discussions. Conscious Discussions is a talk show. It's about an hour long. It airs 2 to 3 times a week. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, we interview individual heroes from around the globe. So we interview people about their experiences in making a difference in some way, be it greening the world or starting an organic movement or a recycling movement or whatever it is that they have done, or creating peace or volunteering. We cover all kinds of topics there, individual heroes. Heroes. And basically, the reason why we do that is to try to encourage our listeners to realize their individual power. As an individual, we have an incredible opportunity to leave an impact on this planet, and we have a choice every moment of every day as to what kind of impact that's going to be. And by highlighting individuals like this, we're hoping to encourage people to jump on that conscious green, you know, movement that's going on right now. And occasionally on every other Sunday, we have positive eco news and Sunday gardening segments that happen on those days.
That's neat. I was referring to the gardening stuff. The other stuff sounds fascinating, frankly, too, but I was talking about the additional ecology orientation and the gardening show.
When you mentioned earlier about the no-till method, I thought, oh my gosh, you and I could talk for so long.
Undoubtedly. Yeah, I obviously it's not the focus of this program, but in fact, they say that gardening is a function to some extent of your age. Which is to say, as you get older, you're more likely to garden more. I was looking to rent out a place that I own, and I was mentioning to somebody that, you know, this has an area where you can actually do some gardening. They were like in their 20s, and they were looking at me, and I said, okay, you're not interested in gardening, right? And they weren't. But no, I've done a lot of gardening and studies of intensive gardening, you know, bio-intensive gardening and that kind of thing, which I'm sure falls right in with what you're talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about there. And I do find that there is a trend for people after they have started to have children, that's when they tend to want to get back to gardening because they want to teach those skills and those experiences to their children, some of the fond memories that they may have with their grandparents or with their family. There's a big movement with community gardens out there for larger centers for people who don't have access to green space to garden in, which is wonderful. There's all kinds of ways to, balcony garden or roof garden as well, and that's
right.
Becoming very popular right now, and it's a very
sure.
green activity to do as well. So I see it as something that's definitely growing in a younger and younger audience.
That's great. There's also, of course, the economic impact of growing your own food is obviously very positive.
Oh, absolutely. You can easily grow $1,000 in a small garden in one season, save your family that much money. And it adds up so quickly, you don't realize it. But
absolutely.
Start comparing the prices, start weighing what you're bringing in, and you'll be
mm-hmm.
surprised what you're actually saving.
Yeah, and especially if you're growing with natural methods, which is obviously what you're suggesting, you
mm-hmm.
won't be spending a lot of money to do the gardening, and especially if you save seeds from year to year and so forth.
Yeah, concentrate on growing your soil first, and you'll have healthy
mm-hmm.
plants.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I was going to mention in that context, there's also something that people can look up if they're interested, which is referred to as community-supported agriculture, so that
mm-hmm.
even if you can't, for whatever reason, garden on your own, you can help support people who are, and, of course, improve your own nutrition and save yourself some money by becoming involved with a community-supported agriculture-based farm.
Hmm. How interesting.
Yeah. Oh, you're not familiar with that. Yeah, it's the CSA.
I am not familiar,
yeah.
No.
Yeah, what happens?
I'm sorry, that's different from the delivery services?
Delivery is sometimes based on a community-supported agriculture system if that's a service that a particular farm or group provides, but not necessarily. Sometimes you would, if it's someplace close, you might go there. But there is also delivery. But basically what occurs, and this may be in line with what you were thinking of too, what occurs is that once you find or gather together with the farmer who is providing that, you buy a share of what they're going to produce in a given year or in a given harvest season. So that let's say you and 10 other people are each about, or 9 other people are each buying 10% of the output, and then that tells the farmer how much money he's going to have for the year, instead of the usual farming situation where they simply don't know. And, of course, you don't know what you're getting and so on. And then people tend to stick with someone that they find produces good quality organic produce.
Very interesting.
That's what that movement's about. It's called community-supported agriculture. But tell me also, tell us, about the Authors Read program that you do. That sounds very interesting.
Oh, you know, that's a lot of fun. Actually, that started out of I had this big schedule constraints situation, and I found that I was having to let go one of my passions, which was book reviewing. I loved to book review, and one of the things I loved about doing it was, you know, not just about writing and supporting other authors, but was that the books, when I was finished with them, would go to some wonderful causes around our community,
right,
like the local literacy group and so forth. And so it was really a good, you know, a feel-good thing, you know, helping everyone.
Sure.
You know, it was a wonderful thing. But I found I just couldn't do it anymore. So what I decided to do instead was do the Authors Read radio show. So instead of doing book reviews and supporting people that way, what I've done is I've created a radio show where authors and writers, playwrights, poets, all genres can come in there. Well, most genres can come in there and read on the Authors Read radio show for a 15-minute show. So it airs on Mondays, Fridays, and Saturdays typically,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily every single one of those days. Depends on how many bookings we get that month, but usually it's Mondays, Fridays, and Saturdays. And it's right here on the Blog Talk Radio station. And what you do is you get to hear authors read from their published work for about 12 minutes during that 15-minute broadcast. And what that does is it gives you a little sample of their work in their own voice, which is a unique
right.
aspect for the reader and for other authors as well.
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea, first of all, and obviously because you've been experienced, it clearly works out pretty well, and I assume that the authors enjoy the experience as well.
Mm-hmm. They do. They just love it, and I know they find it very useful for marketing purposes in the future. I know a lot of most of our guests will place links for their shows on
mm-hmm.
their websites and use it as a way for their potential reader to be able to access a little snippet of their work in a very user-friendly manner. So it's very helpful to them in that regard. I know they really enjoy the process and the experience and the feedback, but I really enjoy doing it too. I have just an absolute blast doing it, and the listener feedback is very encouraging too.
Just for curiosity, you said the situation where the writer rather reads for about 12 of the 15 minutes. The other 3 minutes
mm-hmm.
is a conversation?
No, the other 3 minutes would be the intro, outro. That would be me talking about, you know, who's being featured, and I'll give the bio and the intro, outro music for the show, that kind of thing.
That's great. Let me go ahead and ask you to mention, if you will, the websites that our listeners can access so that they can access both of those shows and then as well your three books.
Okay. Well, you can find us right
here
on the blog.
They're all grabbing their pens now. I just thought we should wait 1 second. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, good. And hopefully they're reusing a piece of paper as well. Don't forget you can cut open an envelope and use that side too. So don't forget there's lots of paper sources out there to use for notes. So, yes, you can find us right here in the Blog Talk Radio station, blogtalkradio.com/consciousdiscussions. That's all one word, Conscious Discussions, or blogtalkradio.com/authorsread. Again, that's all one word, Authors Read.
Mm-hmm.
So you can find us there on this station, or you can go to www.brummett.ca. That's BRUMMET.ca. That is our main website, B as in boy, RUMMET.ca. And it has links to everything that we do there.
Okay, for the few people who don't know, by the way, the extension CA rather than COM means Canada. And so that's a country two-letter abbreviation. So it's www.brummett, B as in boy, R-U-M as in Mary, twice, E-T.ca. And then everything else will appear there, and you can access Trash Talk, Towards Understanding, and Purple Snowflake Marketing, among other things.
Yes. Absolutely. They can find articles and links to resources for green and conscious living and children organizations, recycling, art programs, things like that they can find on the link page. They can learn about vermiculture, which is composting with worms.
Right.
And they can also find, as you mentioned, information about our books, excerpts. They can hear us read excerpts from the books as well. And they can also find out about everything else we do, our newsletters and our two blogs and, oh, gosh, everything that we do. It's all there.
All there for the taking, buying, exploring, everything. I have another question for you, though.
Okay.
You and your husband collaborate on most or all of your projects, and I think that's great, but I guess the question is, how do you do it? It would seem to me to be perhaps difficult.
You know, can you believe it? We do it with one office, one computer.
And no weapons.
Well, no. Actually, we get along very, very well. And as it happens, Dave is actually more of a night person, and I'm much more of a morning person. So when it comes to doing the actual creative work, it works out fairly well, and so we end up, you know, high-fiving on the way outside the office door sometimes, kind of a thing. But we do end up finding a good balance, and sometimes there are contradictions where we both have the itch or a need to be doing a certain project, and there's only the one computer to be working on or the one telephone to work with, and that can sometimes be a crimp in the style. But majority of the time, we don't find that there's a conflict in that way. You know, a lot of people will ask us what it's like to work with your husband or, you know, with your spouse and mm-hmm. get along and, you know, not have it become issues. Well, the main thing that we find is really having that common courtesy, that, you know, allowing the other individual to be their own individual, celebrating
right.
their uniqueness, and discovering each other's talents and strengths and utilizing those so that you balance each other out and that you're not infringing on one another or making extended expectations that can't be met, which can be definitely something that can, you know, fuel a fire that you definitely don't want to be burning.
Right. But you have found you've been together about 10 years, right?
19, going on 20 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't want to pay what's the word I'm looking for? An insincere-sounding compliment, but you don't sound old enough to have been married almost 20 years. Okay.
Oh, that sounds good. Well, thank you so much.
Well, I was going to say, you could look like the oldest woman in the world, but you sound very young.
I right up until my early 30s, I used to get ID'd when I'd go into a pub or something like that. And it was a sad moment in a way when I stopped getting ID'd, but it was a relief also to not have to always, you know,
right.
worry about where my ID was and have it ready. Yeah, I am a young-looking person, and I do speak like a young person, and
mm-hmm.
I do hear that quite often, but no, I'm 40. I'm going to be 40 in a few months.
just a child.
Well, you know, yeah, you know, it's really a point in one's life that I'm realizing where you're coming to a point where you're really understanding what steps led up to being who you are now.
Yeah.
Coming to an understanding of people that you knew in your younger years.
Right.
Understanding them more with a more adult perspective, because as
mm-hmm.
a child, you can only see things from a child's perspective. So,
right.
you know, at this age, it's a very interesting age where you're starting to feel more settled about all kinds of inner issues, and you're gaining more confidence about things that you're putting out there in the world and where you know, what kind of legacy you want to leave behind and what goals you might have. And it's a really interesting time in one's life.
Yeah. I was thinking when you were talking, you know, that I think I went directly from, are you old enough to get in here, to, sir, are you entitled to the senior discount? And it was like just a moment in time from one to the other, it seems. So, you know, I can relate to some degree. No, I mean, I understand. I'm blessed with naturally dark hair, And so it's, you know, if you don't show a lot of gray, people think you're younger than you actually are. And to the extent that's an advantage, of course, that's very nice. Frankly, it doesn't really matter much. But no, what I was saying before is, you know, you do, in fact, sound very young. I expect that both you and your husband are, in fact, rather youngish in the sense that you're doing things that you really enjoy. You're working together and are, although very busy, having a great life together. That makes a difference.
Oh, it absolutely does. It does. And we have our separate loves, too. You know, I have a passion for playing in the dirt, which is gardening.
Right.
And, you know, Dave loves that as well. But his true passion is music. And he loves creating music, writing songs. He loves playing. He's a percussionist. So he plays a variety of types of drums and percussion instruments, and he teaches. He loves to teach, and so that's really his side passion as well. So it's very helpful to have your own side passions and sort of meet in the middle. You know, whereas you know he really likes gardening, but it may not be his first passion. Whereas
right.
I really like music, and I even dabble at percussion. I play a little bit, but you know, and I attend some of his workshops and assist in the business, but that's his passion. You see what I mean? So
Absolutely.
We allow ourselves that.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I'm going to let you go, and thank you very much for joining us. But let me first mention again that to access your books and a lot of the things you're doing, and I'm sure the connection to your radio shows is also there. It's www.brummett2ms1t.ca. Correct?
That is correct.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. The time went far too quickly.
Oh, Jeff, you know, it was a real pleasure. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Thank you. Take care.
You too.
All right, everybody. That was Lillian Brummett. Thanks very much. Bye-bye. And we are still here and on the air with you at Blog Talk Radio. That was Lillian Brummett. And we are going to slide into, as it were, our essay in just a moment, but I first want to invite you to take down our number for next week, because I don't think there'll be enough time this week. The number to reach us on air next week, beginning at 8, we are changing our time because of the time change. So beginning next week, just briefly, we'll be on, instead of at 8 o'clock Pacific, we'll be on at 7 p.m. Pacific. So adjust your calendars or your clocks accordingly, please. This weekend, Daylight Savings ends. And then we'll be changing time again after that because we'll be on half an hour earlier. It's a bit complicated, but next week, join us at 7 p.m. Pacific. And the number for next week is area 347-994-3796. And now I wanted to go into the special essay we discussed at the top of the show. And what occurred was that I received a forwarded email from someone who clearly believed in what was being espoused in the email, and I wrote a response that I'm going to share with you, but first I wanted to read you the email that I received. When I had to testify at the murder trial of my parents a week ago, I was asked to raise my right hand. The bailiff started, "Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?" I stood there and waited, but said nothing. She said, "Do you?" I was stunned. I blurted out, "What happened to you, so help me God?" She came back with, "Do you?" I replied yes, but I was perplexed. The judge then said, "You can say that if you want to." I stopped, raised my right hand, and finished with, "So help me God." It's no wonder we have so many problems in this country. If I had my wits about me, I'd have told them that taking God out of the courtroom is only going to result in more criminals and murderers. I don't know what can be done about it, but it's time for us to step up and do something. NBC this morning had a poll on the question. They had the highest number of responses they've ever had for one of their polls, and the percentage was as follows. 86% to keep the words, 86% to keep the words, 14% against. That's a pretty commanding public response. I was asked to send this on if I agreed or delete if I don't. Now it's your turn. It said that 86% of Americans believe in God. Therefore, I have a very hard time understanding why there's such a mess about having "In God We Trust" on our money and having God in the Pledge of Allegiance. Why is the world caving to this 14%? And I then responded. And that's what I'm going to share with you now. We, by the way, have about 6 minutes remaining in the show. And after we finish this, we'll talk about something else briefly. But here is the response. As you know, I usually don't respond to this sort of thing, but I'm making an exception. First, polling doesn't matter. Polling questions can be worded to get almost any response that a questioner wants. Further, call-in polls are even worse. People who don't believe or don't care whether the word God is included in something won't bother responding. Rather, it's the most zealous who respond, and religious people tend to be more zealous than agnostics. Atheists and religious people who believe religion and government need to be separated, as the founders, including James Madison, generally referred to as the father of the Constitution, believed, don't usually bother. In the science of polling, this kind of thing is referred to as self-selection and is derided for being grossly unscientific. I realize that suggesting science in the discussion of God seems silly, but it might be worth noting. Some polls also say that the number of believers is closer to 50%, but I don't know that those polls are any more valid than the ones cited in your email. I also find the connection between removing the word God and additional criminality to be tenuous at best. Can anyone prove that? Can anyone provide any evidence at all? To suggest, as some do, that crimes increased since prayer was taken out of American schools is probably true, but makes correlation into causation, and that makes no sense at all. An example to show the difference is pretty easy. It is absolutely true that the numbers of forcible rape go up in direct proportion to ice cream consumption. Now let's say that again. The more ice cream that gets eaten in the United States, the higher number of forcible rapes. Would anyone reasonably suggest that ice cream causes rape or that rape causes the consumption of ice cream? Of course not. But the numbers are absolutely correlated. Crime's gone up for all kinds of reasons, and no one can demonstrate that it's related to no prayer in school. Prayer in school and God in the civil arena tend to exclude or separate those who don't believe in the dominant religion. In public schools, when prayer was common, Jesus Christ's name was commonly invoked. Does that mean that Jews and Muslims, as well as agnostics and atheists and Hindus, should just suck it up and cross themselves? Am I an atheist? It depends what day it is. Some days I believe in a lot of things, and others very little in the realm of the non-concrete or supernatural. But I do believe in the Constitution of the United States, including all its amendments. Yes, the second as well as the first. And part of that First Amendment includes, inferentially, the separation of church or religion and state or government. Government includes schools and courtrooms. Everyone should be free to practice her religion, and everyone should have the right to be free from other people's religions. Pray, believe, light candles or don't. Just don't require other people to be exposed to it. Okay, end of soapbox. That's my opinion. Love to hear yours. You're welcome to join us next week, beginning at 7 p.m. Pacific time. That will be 8 in the mountain area, 9 central, 10 eastern. And for those who are in the Atlantic time zone, the test next week is going to be who would be in the Atlantic time zone. That would be 10, whatever I just said, 7, 8, 9, 10. I guess that would be 11 o'clock. I can't even keep track. Atlantic time is an hour after Eastern, so that would be the situation. In fact, it would be 11 o'clock. I wanted to thank again Lillian Brummett for joining us tonight. The opinions you heard at the end of the show don't necessarily reflect hers. I never asked her a question about that. And you can access the blogging site by going to jeffonblogging.blogspot.com. And you can also access the book that I talked about earlier, which is Mobile Millionaire, by going to tinyurl.com/mobilemillionaire. For those of you who tuned in specifically to hear Lillian, I hope you've enjoyed the rest of the show. I hope you heard the earlier part as well as the part we are finishing up with now. If you would care to go to that site, anybody who is still with us, either of those two sites, you would be welcome to do so. And if you wish to contact us after doing so, at the numbers or the email addresses that are provided at those sites, obviously we'd be pleased to respond to you. Next week, we have a guest who is an activist in the Democratic Party. We would be more than happy to hear from Republicans that evening. And as said, you're welcome to join us and argue with us or question us. And when Jerry joins us next week, you'll be able to listen to what he has to say. You'll probably end up hearing a longer conversation because we'll be kicking things back and forth about politics in the United States. And we'll be talking about the healthcare situation and a variety of other topics, I'm sure, including Afghanistan. We might actually disagree on a couple of things, but for the most part, we'll probably be together. Anyway, thanks. We hope you'll join us next week. Thanks for joining us this week. If you care to hear any of the archive shows, you can do so at the same site at which you found this one, at blogtalkradio.com/Jeff-Bushman. And that's specifically stated in case anyone happens to listen show who is not doing so live and is doing so at another site. Thanks again. We'd be thrilled if you joined us again. Yes, absolutely. Speaking of everything with Jeff Bushman, that's me.